Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Zarin.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
Sorry, I was just napping on my bike.
That's not a bike. That's the intern, Mickey.
Hey, what's up, Mickey? You're kind of cool.
So warm. Temporary intern.
Yeah.
Mickey Rude Dude.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Your buddy, huh?
I borrowed a dog for the week.
Uh-huh.
And I'm feeling good about it.
Nice.
You know, I miss my dog.
Oh, emotional support, Rude
Dude.
Doing
a little dog sitting, and I have to have him with me all the time.
I get it. I totally get it.
Those are the rules.
Yeah.
Mama makes rules.
But why do you have all the geese?
Don't ask.
Okay.
Don't ask.
I saw them out in the back, and I was like, those are Elizabeth's.
Totally mine. Yeah. Do you know what's ridiculous?
Oh, my God, yes.
Ooh,
do you ever heard how people say, oh, you only use 10% of your brain?
Yeah.
Right? That's total nonsense.
Right.
Right? So I figure you know that.
Yeah.
There's another one people say, like, oh, you're 90% bacteria.
I've never heard that. I've heard like you're 90% water or something. But
like roughly 70s.
Yeah, yeah,
some
yeah.
In the high 60s, yes.
Sure.
But sometimes people even say in the
90% 80s. Bacteria?
Yeah, that's also wrong.
Yeah, I would say so. Who says that?
It was a common science pop sci thing, right?
Uh-huh.
So apparently, if you count up all the bacterial cells, there's been a recent rather scientific, and I will say just scientific. I'm putting the rather on there because I'm sure it'll be wrong later.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway, 56%. That's the new estimate. You, Elizabeth, are 56% bacteria.
Oh.
Me, Zarin, 56% bacteria.
Dave, 46%.
No, he's 57. He's got an extra
1%. Mickey, 86%.
Now, by weight, you know, like not by volume, but by weight.
Okay.
You would be 99.7% human cells.
Yeah.
And only 0.3% bacterial cells by weight. So they're not really taking up a lot of your you know, sense of who you are.
Got it.
But
that makes sense.
You're still 56%.
That's ridiculous.
Bacteria. Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
So how's your moonwalking pneumonia doing? You ready to rock this one?
Oh, buddy. I'm getting there.
Okay.
I'm getting there. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Well, that's all I got for you. So hit it.
Well, you know what else is ridiculous?
What?
Canoeing into the great beyond, but not really.
Ooh.
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free and 100% ridiculous.
Oh, I know you damn heard that.
You know the Darwin Awards?
Yeah, for being dumb.
Well, it's like
I've been nominated
named
a couple
for
of
Charles
years.
Darwin, and it's a riff on survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
So the project says, quote, In the spirit of Charles Darwin, the Darwin Awards commemorate individuals who protect our gene pool by making the ultimate sacrifice of their own lives. Mm-hmm. Darwin Award winners eliminate themselves in an extraordinarily idiotic manner, thereby improving our species' chances of long-term survival.
Yeah, you know, like the MacArthur Genius Awards? Mm-hmm. They give you like $1 million or $500,000 or whatever it is. I've actually been given 3 Darwin Awards, and you get
You can't, because you have to die to get them.
You don't know about my past, Elizabeth. You only have to die for a little while.
Oh, I see.
You can come back.
Like, Darwin Awards are like dumb ways to die, basically. And there are some parameters.
I've done some dumb stuff. You were like, you didn't die?
Yeah. Well, accidental self-sterilization also qualifies for an award. So
oh, that would explain the second
probably
one.
Why you got, but it's actually, you know, it's usually awarded posthumously. The candidate is disqualified, though, if, quote, innocent bystanders are killed in the process.
It's basically our rule. Don't hurt anyone.
Because they could have, like, helped the gene pool.
Yeah.
Who have been some of the winners?
Who have been some of the winners,
Thank
Elizabeth?
Thank you for asking. Gary Hoy, who fell from the 24th story of the Toronto Dominion Center while trying to demonstrate to a group of students that the windows were unbreakable.
Oh, the one who throws himself against the glass, and then the glass goes out, and everyone's like, well, I guess he was wrong.
Yeah. John,
your teacher, dude. Like, imagine your teacher throws himself against the glass.
Oh, how traumatic.
I shouldn't laugh.
John Allen Chow, who, on his own behalf, tried to convert an isolated indigenous group in on the North Sentinel Island to Christianity, and then they killed him.
Recently, like the last like few years, he went out there, and everyone's like, don't go out there. And he's like, I'm going with Jesus. And they're like, you ain't coming back.
Yeah, it's dark stuff.
Yeah.
Dark stuff. But what would happen if a guy whose last name was Darwin did something to earn himself a spot?
Oh, double Darwin.
Double Darwin. John Darwin is the guy's name.
Nice.
He got in a kayak, and he paddled out into the ocean. Only to never return.
Okay.
It's not a foolish way to go. It's tragic.
Yeah. I mean, that one, I don't know if we're going to.
But here's the thing. I want to play off a quote from the great Eli Cash from one of my favorite films, The Royal Tenenbaums.
Oh, right.
Well, everyone knows John Darwin died off the waters of County Durham in England. What this podcast presupposes is maybe he didn't.
Wild cat.
Zarin, we got ourselves a good old-fashioned faked death.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So John Darwin. Mm-hmm. John Darwin is a boomer, born around 1950.
Okay.
He studied biology and chemistry in school.
Ooh.
And in 1973, he married a woman named Anne Stevenson.
Okay.
Oh, Anne. He was a science and math teacher for 18 years.
Hmm.
And then he worked at a bank.
Okay.
And then he became a prison officer, a CO at, I guess it's His Majesty's, not Her Majesty's now, but at the time it was Her Majesty's Prison Home House.
That's a strange career path.
Right?
School teacher, banker, CO.
Yeah, exactly. His wife was a receptionist at a doctor's office.
Okay.
Those two had another side hustle.
Ooh.
They rented out rooms or bedsits to people. And they had 12 houses at one point.
Damn.
And so they'd rent these rooms out to people. One of the houses was even attached to the one that they lived in.
So basically they were running a little Airbnb empire.
Completely.
All right.
But like more long term.
Yeah, sure. But I mean more dignified, more British or whatever.
In 2000, they bought 2 houses in Seton Carew.
Okay.
And that's where the trouble started.
Any relation to Rod Carew?
Yes. It's the town is his father.
I may be pronouncing it wrong. It's Rod Carew.
Carew. Seton Carew.
Sorry. Go on.
Lots of debt.
Yes.
Debt.
Bad debt. I don't want debt.
Yeah. The couple, they overextended themselves. They couldn't keep up. They were about to start bankruptcy proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
And there didn't seem to be a solution. And then John Darwin, he had an idea, Zarin.
Oh, he's like, what if there was one less John Darwin?
One less. Thursday, March 21st, 2002, he figured that was the perfect day to disappear.
Okay.
Yeah. So 4 times during the day, he calls his wife, Anne, at work.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she's at a receptionist job. And one of the calls, he tells her, this is it. Pick me up later. And so he's at work too at the prison. So he's like whispering it.
He's calling on a prison line.
Yeah. So when he gets off his shift, he goes home to Seton Carew.
Uh-huh.
Seton Carew. Seton.
I don't know, whatever. Whatever. I made it up. I
honestly
don't know.
I don't even know. So at about 4:30 in the afternoon, he goes to a storage shed and he gets out his red kayak called the Orca. And please note that this is a kayak, not a canoe.
Yes. Enclosed top.
Yeah. So he takes the Orca and he heads down to the beach in front of the house.
Mm-hmm.
6 o'clock at this point, and it's dark. Anne, She was now home from work. She meets up with him as arranged near this beach, North Gare. Mm-hmm. It's a long, sandy beach. There's like low sand dunes and beach grass. And right. It's at the mouth of the River Tees where it meets the North Sea.
Okay.
Brr,
oh, wow.
Cold. Yeah. it's popular with bird watchers.
Sure.
And like the marshland behind the beach just comes alive with wildflowers in June and July.
A riot of color.
Yeah, it's lovely. And so it's understandable that someone would want to kayak out in the little mini bay off
sure.
the beach.
Oh, yeah, totally. People do all the time.
Six at night?
Is he a photographer going for moonshots?
Who knows? So Anne, she rolls up to the beach in her bitchin' Skoda. She's got a little scoot-scoot.
Okay.
John, he's standing there in jeans, a black jacket, and a black hat, and he's mm-hmm. got on a backpack full of supplies.
Sure.
He turns away from Anne and gives his empty kayak a little push out into the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hop in the car and drive 40 minutes away to the Durham Railway Station.
Hmm.
It's way out of town, away from many more convenience stations. He needs to get out of the area.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells Anne, when you get home, call the prison and ask to speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just like she normally would.
Oh.
And that's what she did. Like, she calls up. They say, you know what? He left already. So she's like, uh-oh. So she calls the cops and she reports him missing.
Mm.
When everyone discovered that the kayak, or later as the press is going to keep referring to it as a canoe, but friend, it was a kayak. I have seen the picture. That is not a canoe. Whatever.
I like how you're upset about this.
I am very upset. They look and they see the kayak. Well, the mm-hmm. canoe is missing.
You can say kayak. I'm with you.
I'm going to just say canoe because that's where it goes from
here. It's a fun word.
It is fun.
Canoe.
Kayak. So they find out it's missing from the mm-hmm. shed.
Sure.
So the rescue crews from the police, the Coast Guard, they head out to the beach. They put on their red shorts. They start running. John! John! They're yelling. They go up and down the coastline, and they're out in boats. They find a single paddle on the beach, but nothing else. And then the search gets called off the next night. So they searched all through the night. The okay. next day, then they're like, you know what?
48 hours, that's it.
Where was John?
Where is Mr. D?
Thank you for asking. He was hiding out in the Lake District.
Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful place to hide out.
Beautiful. Anne knew where he was. He called her on the regular to get updates. Are they still looking for me? And then...
Did you go to the Jane Austen
book
event? And he's like,
what are the locals saying about all this? She's like, well, I was down at the tea shop. And so she's telling him, you know, how people are all reacting about this. And the two of them, they think the coast is clear. So she goes to Cumbria to pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
And it had only been about 2 weeks.
Okay.
That's how long he stays away. And apparently this man's beard game was strong because he comes out sporting a full beard that apparently he didn't have when he left town.
In 2 weeks?
2 weeks. Yeah.
Damn,
and
son.
He's wearing totally different clothes and he's doing this whole like, I'm an old man who limps and uses a cane.
Okay.
Like,
is
all
he
of
doing
his...
a voice like that too?
Sure. Let's say he was.
All right.
Disguised, Darren.
Making choices.
Yeah, choices. So a quick trip down the motorway, mm-hmm. John's home. A couple weeks later, his canoe, kayak, mm-hmm. all bashed up, washes up on a nearby beach.
Oh no.
And Anne, she's playing the distraught wife,
yes.
and she's like, will my husband's remains ever be recovered? And they're like, you don't think maybe, okay, you jumped there, okay. Remember how I told you that one of the homes that the couple rented out as bedsits was attached to their home?
Mm-hmm.
They were at number 3, The Cliff, and The Cliff is the name of the street.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Number 3, The Cliff.
The Cliff.
So— Anne
That's
is in,
your address. Like you get your mail at number
at
3,
number
the
3,
cliff.
The cliff.
Okay.
So Anne, she's in the family home at number 3.
Uh-huh.
And so is John.
Okay.
He's at the house.
Uh-huh.
But like when people would come over, he used a secret passageway to sneak into his hiding place in number 4.
Oh, Lord.
Right next door.
Like through the secret garden.
He's like a little rat scurrying back and
a
forth.
A little rat.
And like he even, there was a one of the passageway parts had wooden floorboards and mm-hmm. they were creaky. So he paved it over with concrete.
Oh, damn.
So that it wouldn't make any noise.
That's an answer. I would have gone with carpeting.
Right? Well, he didn't just limit himself to numbers 3 and 4, The Cliff.
Uh-huh.
He had a disguise, baby.
Oh, yes.
What's he just limped all over town. Like, he would walk down to the beach, the scene of the crime.
Uh-huh.
And then he even went on April 22nd, 2002, just 1 month after his disappearance,
mm-hmm.
he went to the library and got himself a library card.
Why? He just needed books?
Yeah, I guess.
He couldn't have his wife
well,
go do
see.
It?
You'll see why he gets it.
Oh, wait a minute. That's right. Part of his new identity.
Yeah. So okay. It's like
first step of new identity.
He's in this little fishing village.
I forgot people can still
there's
use
There's only
like
7,000 people in town.
Yeah. I figured that was not going to be a big population.
And you'd think that like strolling around would be a little dicey.
I'm thinking some of these people know him well enough that they could smell him. You know, like that smells like John Darwin.
Yeah. And so, you know, he like you were saying, he's working on getting this new identity.
Mm-hmm.
So he poked around some graveyards and like checked out headstones. He went through the local newspaper archives looking for a man who was born around his birth year and died as a child.
So that wouldn't be a man.
A boy child.
You threw
a
me
male.
With that man. I was like,
he's looking normally, for a male.
You want to pick someone who doesn't get a card, you know?
Well, bingo, John Jones.
Okay.
So he finds someone also named John.
Uh-huh.
The real John Jones was born the same year as John Darwin, but 25 miles away in Sunderland.
Okay.
And he died when he was only 5 weeks old from enteritis.
Perfect.
At the city's Hospital for Infectious Diseases.
An ideal candidate.
Yeah. Buried May 3rd, 1950.
Okay.
So John Darwin takes the kid's information, goes to get a duplicate birth certificate. Uh-huh. He got a black and white picture of himself sporting that big old beard, took it to the library for the librarian to sign with a statement that he was a regular customer.
Ah.
Yeah. Then he took all the new documents and he went to get a passport.
Okay.
So that's why he got the library card.
Yeah, got it.
The address on the passport, number 3, the cliff.
No.
Yeah. It wasn't his undoing, though. That's just bold.
It's just lazy.
That's just axis bold.
You say bold, I say lazy.
A year later, April of 2003, he gets declared dead.
Okay. They at least got that part.
Yeah. So Anne, she takes the death certificate. She takes the evidence from the police, the whole smashed up canoe thing, goes to the banks. She did not carry the smashed up canoe with her to the bank. And at some point, a body washed up on the beach.
Ooh.
And we know it's not John.
Yeah.
The cops, they were like, uh-oh. And it goes around town. A body's on the beach. So they're like, okay, we got to be really careful. Tread lightly with Anne.
Of course.
They identify the body as not John. And so when they're sure of it, they go to tell Anne. Like, I know you've heard. She gives the performance of a lifetime.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Like daytime Emmy?
She turns it on. She is Emmy worthy.
Like Susan Lucci, watch out. You're losing again
Completely.
This year.
She breaks into tears. She's wailing in sorrow. And you're thinking, well, it's not John, right?
Uh-uh.
She's like, I just wish it were him so that I could finally have some closure.
Oh, that's a good
angle.
A body
to bury. I just end the not knowing.
Yeah.
You know? So she's just.
It seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you know who else thought John was dead?
John.
His two sons.
Oh, my God.
His two sons.
He didn't let them in.
He had two adult sons.
They're not good actors. I don't think they can commit to the bit.
They had two adult sons that were not in on it.
That's rough.
And she later admitted that lying to her sons was, quote, something that I will live to regret for the rest of my time.
You think as a mother?
Yeah. So Anne, she uses the death certificate to claim her husband's 25,000-pound life insurance policy.
Okay, there you go. He's got some fraud.
His 25,000-pound teacher's pension.
Okay.
His 58,000-pound prison service pension.
Mm-hmm.
4,000 pounds in payout from the Department of Work and Pensions. And then another 137,000 pounds from a Norwich Union mortgage insurance policy.
So she's just cashing out. She's like, let's leave this casino.
Yeah, she gets 249K out of it.
Damn.
So now John Darwin is John Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He has a new identity. He's got a lot of cash. What's next?
I hope it's we leave England and go live somewhere nice off of this money.
Oh, that's really interesting. You should mention that. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll find out about that.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Springtime is all about fresh air and fresh starts, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security. It's the only home security system I use and recommend. Here's why I love it. With the days getting longer and the weather warming up, we're out and about a lot more, and that applies to criminals too. I don't have to worry because SimpliSafe blankets my whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. And there are indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over my property day and night. It's not just cameras. SimpliSafe has professional monitoring agents who keep watch on your home when you aren't there. Agents can stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera, warning them that they're being recorded and the police are on their way. Sounds great, right? There's no contract, and they offer a 60-day money-back guarantee. So trying SimpliSafe is risk-free. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. That's simplisafe.com/ridiculouscrime. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where were we?
We were about to leave England, hopefully, and go somewhere tropical with all this money.
So we're talking about John Darwin, a.k.a. John Jones, a.k.a. Canoe Man. He doesn't have to go to work. He can't leave the house that much. So, like, what's a guy to do? He hops online.
Crossword puzzles.
He hops online and he plays interactive role-playing games, one in particular called Asheron's Call.
Oh, actually, I know this
one. He goes, like, deep in. And according to the game's website, it is, quote, where thousands of players inhabit a beautiful 3D fantasy world to make friends and seek out perilous adventure.
Yes. It was what they call a massively multiple online role-playing game. And I had a friend, a roommate, actually, who played it. And he used to, like, go off and, like, get, like, a shield or a sword or whatever and then sell it to strangers
on
eBay.
Well, that's exactly it. So Anne was, like, quote.
He made a ton.
Anne says, the people that played it became characters in this world. They had money, they could buy and sell things, they could buy and sell property, and they could cast spells on one another.
Totally, but they also turned it into real-world cash. Like, I'll meet you at this tree and give you my sword, and the person's like, I'll give you $500 US.
Yeah, and things, like you're saying, it turns into real-world, right? Yeah. So John, his character is a druid, which, like, of course. And then on there, he interacts with this 40-year-old woman who's been married three times. Her name is Kelly Steele. And she lives in Kansas City, Missouri, USA.
Get it, Kelly.
Yeah. So they start with, like, on the game, and then that moves to emails.
Oh, no.
And then internet calls.
Oh.
And he's keeping this a secret from Anne.
Oh, no.
So they're, like, using the phone over the internet.
The woman who helped him fake his death.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So John sends money to Kelly.
Oh, no.
And he's like, use this money and go buy me a rundown 10-acre farm just outside of Kansas City.
Oh.
And she's like, will do. Then he takes his John Jones passport and he flies to the States. He tells Anne, you know what? I just need a break.
I need some me time.
Like, from what?
Some John
What do you
time?
Need a break
All
from?
All you've been is on break.
You hide
You're
in
dead.
A bedsit and you play video games.
Yeah, I mean, like,
he's like, well, I'm also, there's a possible business venture there. So she's like, fine, whatever, go. Things didn't go so great. He got out there and the relationship immediately fell apart with Kelly. So he goes back to the UK.
She's like, I thought it was the accent. It's not the accent.
No, she's like, oh, you're not really a druid. Yeah. And so then he comes back. He's like, Anne, I just lost 30K in my business venture. I'm not getting it back. Yeah, because Kelly was like, get out of here and I'm keeping the cash. So he goes back to his room next door and he gets back online. And like, he's kind of going stir crazy.
Okay.
So when it was really cold out, he could put on his disguise and like limp around town.
Okay, yeah.
you know, it's just a little fishing village. But in the summer months, it's crowded and, like, you can't put a bunch of clothes on to hide yourself.
Now, are people talking about how his now widow has got a new man on the side?
Well, no, they never see them together. He's
Oh, they don't see him limping into the property?
He probably limps out of number four, not out of... So they think he's just a weirdo.
Okay, just a renter. They have a lot of renters.
But he did get recognized.
Oh, knew it.
In 2003, like, a former coworker of his sees him and then tells the cops.
Oh.
And then, but you
so
know what?
Not a friend.
Yeah. And to the rescue.
Yes.
They question her and she's like, look, this is a huge mistake. John has a cousin who looks exactly like him. And the cops are like, oh, okay, that clears it up. Yeah, that's fine.
Rightio.
Then a tenant in number four, another renter, recognizes him, stops him and says, aren't you supposed to be dead?
I thought you were dead.
Just like growls at him and is like, don't tell anybody.
Oh, no.
So the guy keeps his mouth closed because you don't want to upset your landlord, I guess.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So his brushes with discovery, they're stressing Anne out.
I bet.
And she starts souring on the whole setup. She's just not into it.
She can't even have her kids come around.
She told the Sun newspaper, quote, I lost all interest in our sex life, leaving John, who never seemed to stop thinking about sex, angry and frustrated. So, like, they need to get away. They need a change of scenery. Maybe that'll help.
They should have gone away the first time.
I know. And they had dreamed of doing just that when they had the fake death
Calgon
windfall.
Take me away.
So in 2004, they moved to Cyprus.
Okay.
And they thought, well, you know, we'll buy some land here.
Yeah.
This is what Anne said, quote, we only went for a week and we looked into quite a few properties, but it just seemed to take so long to do anything over there. It's like, they're just not efficient. So.
It's very Mediterranean, in the middle of the Mediterranean.
Like, honey, I think you're in the wrong place. 2005, John was like, hold on, I'm going to go inspect some things. He goes to Spain and Gibraltar. And he went
where
there.
All Brits run away for money.
Right? Yes. I'm like, oh, you won't find any British people in Spain. He goes there to check out a 60-foot catamaran worth £45,000.
First good idea he's had.
Yeah. And it was owned by this boat dealer, Robert Hopkin.
Okay.
And notice he goes to like an English boat dealer.
Yeah, of course.
This guy said, quote, the sort of boat he was looking at was definitely a boat you could happily go long-term cruising
That's
on.
That's what I'm talking about.
Possibly around the world and certainly disappear from society if you wanted to. It's quite easy to do on a large boat like that.
Could I reach the South Seas?
Yeah.
So
the catamaran didn't really float their boat though.
Oh.
Yeah, thanks. That hurt. That
also,
hurt
does he know anything about sailing? That's a pretty big boat if you don't know what you're doing.
I don't know. Maybe he does. He lives in, like, grew up in a fishing village.
I'm hoping.
They didn't want to sail the seas and, like, drift above Davy Jones's locker. They went back to the plan to buy land in a foreign country, like you were saying.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Anne later told the Daily Mirror, quote, he was forever looking at new things and new places on the internet, and one day he just came up with Panama.
Panama
it was.
I would recommend Belize.
Why Panama? Yeah, right? They speak English.
They speak the language as you do.
Why Panama?
Because of all the weird extradition treaties?
Pretty much. Well, an accountant told the Times newspaper, quote, it is very simple. You pay tax in Panama only on income which is judged to have arisen in Panama.
Yeah.
And then it's also really hard for trusts and companies set up there to be investigated by foreign authorities.
Yeah, it's like one of those, like, holes.
Yeah, so John, he reached out to a relocation agent named Mario Villar, and he used Anne's email address for this. He got information about some properties that they liked, and then they took off to Central America. Okay. This is in July of 2006.
Four years.
Yeah. They fell in love with the country.
Oh, they're back in love.
Exactly.
With the country.
It's exactly what they were looking for. So they sold their two properties on the cliff, and they were ready to buy. So they're in Mario's office, and they make a big mistake.
Uh-oh.
Mario asked his wife to take a photo of him with the Darwins, or the Joneses.
Yeah.
And so it all happened so quickly, they didn't have time to say no. Click, picture taken. That's going to come back to haunt them. A picture taken in Panama. So John, he stays in Panama and goes back to England to finalize the details of their move. He emails her constantly. And he always made sure to tell her that, like, in the email, I'm writing to you while sitting naked on the balcony.
That's just his thing?
That's, like, his thing.
Like, third line in the email?
Make sure you understand.
By the way, I am naked on the balcony.
Yet again.
I'm a-dangling in the tropical heat.
In my fifth email of the day.
By the way, still naked, still on the balcony.
And Anne's quote about this, My husband appeared to be becoming more insane by the day. You think?
I just hope he has bug spray.
Right? Ugh. So he had his sights set on buying like a huge piece of land. Mm-hmm. And when he got there, he'd build a house and then develop like an eco resort. That's what he wanted to do.
Oh, yeah. At the time, that was probably the move.
Yeah. So, and she ecotourism. She flies back to Panama and they're working on their plan. But then something mm-hmm. happened. Mm-mm. Panama changed its immigration laws.
Oh.
Yeah. And so in order to formally relocate and get permanent residence, mm-hmm. John had to get a letter from the British police attesting to the fact that he was, quote, a person of good character.
That's why I said Belize.
Yeah. He could have just moved
They'll
to
just
another
take the
country,
money.
Start again.
Yeah.
But whatever reason, he's like, no, Panama.
Venezuela
you know what?
Comes to mind.
He's like, I think it'd be best if I went back to the UK.
No.
I have a plan.
No.
A wild one.
No. And, what about Western Australia? I got a wild one for
and
you.
And here's the story. Uh-huh. The plan. She hears it and she says, quote, I told him he was crazy, but as usual, he didn't listen. He was sure he knew best.
She's now working a theme.
Yeah. You're never going to guess what the plan
cray,
is.
Cray.
Zarin, yeah. Close your eyes.
Oh, yes.
Eyes are closed. I want you to picture it. It's December 1st, 2007. You're a police constable assigned to the West End Central Police Station in London. It's early evening, around 5:30 or so, and the station is buzzing as usual. You're posted up at the front desk, sipping tea and making notes for the book you're working on.
Tut, tut.
It's a biography of the most famous member of the Scotland Yard Flying Squad, DCI Pickles. A man walks into the station off the street. This is a little unusual. Generally, it's other coppers who waltz in and out, but this guy's a civilian. He's tan and he looks a little smug. You dislike him immediately, even before talking to him. You feel bad about this and you're about to chastise yourself for it, but then you stop and think, DCI Pickles always followed his instinct. He always trusted his gut. That's how he found the missing World Cup. What would DCI Pickles do in this situation? You nod at the man as he approaches the counter. Can I help you, sir? You ask. I think I'm a missing person, he says. Oh boy, you think, a nutter. You ask him his name and he tells you, John Darwin. You tell him to have a seat while you go and fetch the sergeant. You pick up the phone and dial an extension. The sergeant comes out and sizes up the man. He's in his late 50s, you'd say. Upon questioning, John Darwin tells you both that he thinks he's a missing person because he doesn't remember the last 5 or 6 years of his life. The last he can remember is early 2002. You reach over to your computer keyboard and you get to work. The sergeant asks John Darwin where he's from. Seton Carew, Cleveland. You start tapping away. Up pops a report about a man who died at sea, his kayak being all that remained of him. You had a canoe, the sergeant says. It was a kayak, says John Darwin. The sergeant looks at you. You tell John Darwin to have a seat. A media firestorm is about to catch flame. So somehow, and I'm not saying it was you, Zarin,
yes.
The UK tabloid press got wind of this amazing canoe man.
I've got a gambling problem, Elizabeth.
Who turned up after being declared dead. Mm-hmm. And you know how the tabloids are.
Oh, yeah. Love them.
And as soon
those
as,
crazy punters.
As soon as they had his name, they began their investigation.
Yes. That's what I'm waiting for. Get
and
the Daily Mail boys on it.
Faster than you can say Jack Robinson, they tracked and to Panama. And then, you know, Panama, model citizen, zero discipline. Yeah. And when they found Anne, they also found that picture from Mario, the real estate agent's office. He had posted it on his website.
Oh, man.
So there was a caption identifying Anne and John, but no last names. And the press went nuts. Detective Superintendent Tony Hutchinson said, quote, that is one line of inquiry we will be following. But he added, photographs can be doctored.
Yeah, that's usually what happens.
Yeah.
Real estate guys are like, I'm going to spend my money on a Photoshop of this yeah. lovely British couple.
Exactly. So Hutchinson also said police had no immediate plans to extradite Anne or go to Panama to interview her. Mm-hmm. He said Darwin's appearance had raised a lot of questions.
Yeah, I bet.
Quote, we need to speak to John Darwin. Clearly, it's only right and proper that we spoke to him under caution. And he said that, you know, he was going to be medically examined. He may have been suffering from amnesia for 5.5 years, he said.
There's like no amnesia test,
no.
right? It's just like these two doctors both agree, right?
Yeah. So Hutchinson, he makes this public appeal for information. Mm-hmm. He tells reporters, we want to piece together exactly where he's been since he went missing in 2002. And then asked whether the investigation was being led by the media. Mm-hmm. He said journalists had more, quote, latitude than the police. And he added, the press have certainly been providing us with a lot of information.
He's like, are you new to the UK?
He's like, you do the legwork. Yeah. That's great. So with a nod from the cops, the press chases on. The Splash News and Picture Agency, they were the first to find Anne.
Okay.
They tracked her down to Panama City and other tabloids hot on their trail. They persuaded her to go into hiding.
They did.
Yeah.
With them, right?
And they said, if you give our reporters and photographers exclusive access.
We want the exclusive, baby.
As her story unraveled into global news, the agency just had like scoop after scoop.
This is like a 1920s story America. I love this.
Because their clients were the Daily Mail and the Mirror.
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. The big ones.
And so the competition, like, they can't keep up.
The Sun's losing it. Like, oh, why are we not?
Oh, yeah. The rumors that Anne was in Panama prompted the Mail to contract David Lee, who was a former Mirror news editor and was now chief of Splash's Miami Bureau, to fly to Central America.
Okay.
Right after his arrival, the Mirror finds out Darwin's address in Panama City. The Mail, they had a team on the ground, but no address.
Okay.
The Mirror has the address, but no team.
Okay.
So they made a deal. The Mirror would hand over the address, and then they would share the scoop. Both papers denied paying her directly, but Splash may have paid her, the news agency.
Totally.
So Splash takes her to the airport for a flight to Miami, and that's where the agency has a base. And from there, they get her back to the UK. And this is when the press starts calling John Darwin Canoe Man. And it's open season at this point. So Anne, she gets back to England and she has to confront more than the tabloids. She has to face her sons.
Oh, right.
Right? Remember them? Anthony and Mark. Mm-hmm. So they issued a joint statement saying that they were, quote, astonished that their mother could have let them believe that their father died. Anne, she's begging their forgiveness, quote, who can blame them? I lied to them, my own sons. What sort of mother am I? That's what she tells the Daily Mail.
Okay, yeah.
My sons are never going to forgive me, she said. Quote, they thought John was dead. Now they're going to hate me. They'll be devastated and will probably want nothing to do with me again.
Probably, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think you're about right.
So far, you're like this kind of analysis you could have used earlier.
So they're like, the Daily Mail's like, tell us more. Quote, I don't want to live my life as a fugitive. I'll have to go back because I won't have any life here. I should never have listened to John, but he can be very persuasive. Of course, I'm to blame too. I know I've done wrong. I just wish I'd told the boys when I found out. I'm sure they would have talked some sense into me, but I didn't. I didn't tell anyone, and one lie led to another.
Yeah. Slippery slope.
There it is, Anne. Yeah. And so the sons, they released this joint statement. Quote, in the short space of time following our dad's appearance on Saturday, we've gone through a roller coaster of emotion. If the paper's allegations of a confession from our ma'am are true, then we very much feel that we have been the victims in a large scam. How could our ma'am continue to let us believe our dad had died when he was very much alive?
Now, how could she?
How could you, ma'am? So the statement added that they had had no contact with either of the parents since John, you know, walked into the police
station. So do we believe them?
I do.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
As they start to protest a little too much, I'm starting to be a little suspicious.
No, I believe him.
Okay.
I believe him. It came out, though, that the investigation into John didn't start when he walked into the police station.
What?
Yeah. It was actually reopened 3 months prior.
Ooh.
In September because
a
co-worker of Anne's at the doctor's office told the cops that she'd overheard a series of suspicious phone calls in hushed tones. Why she waited that long?
Years earlier?
Years. And the timing,
and the timing
is so weird. But Tony Hutchinson, detective superintendent, he said, quote, there was some information which was reported to us 3 months ago to suggest that perhaps there was something suspicious with regards to his disappearance.
I wonder if she caught something else, you know, or whatever.
Well,
something came to light and then she just went and...
But don't forget, Anne went back to... She went back to the UK to do the property settlement. And so maybe like... She was in the doctor's office.
Maybe she was also still in contact with people. And maybe she just offended this woman on some totally unrelated score, like her biscuits are really dry.
Totally.
She's like,
happen,
oh, yeah, I'm going to the police.
Her scones weren't award-winning. Yeah.
Exactly.
So let's take a break.
Oh.
When we come back, we're going to see what the law has in store for the Darwins.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded,
The Apollo Gym murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
John Darwin.
What'd you call me?
Yeah. The man accused of faking his own death in a canoeing accident, a.k.a. kayak, and Darwin, his long-suffering wife. So they get busted after John strolled into the cop shop, says he has amnesia, might be a missing person. Everything fell apart. They wind up charged with a series of fraud-related offenses that added up to like 250,000 pounds.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's so, like all the money they had.
Yeah. John pleads guilty to 7 charges of obtaining cash by deception and a passport offense. Just pleads guilty.
Oh. Hmm.
He denied 9 other charges of using criminal property, an offense related to the money laundering.
Okay.
And the prosecutors are like, okay, the ones that you denied, you're not going to face trial. You know, we're just going to let it lie. And she denies the deception charges and 9 of the using criminal property. So she went to trial.
Hmm.
In court, Anne described John as like domineering, manipulative, just always got what he wanted.
She's a victim.
Yeah. She said that once she thought about leaving him after finding out that he'd had an affair, but then she couldn't contemplate life without him.
Oh, I would have held he forced her somehow. Like, you know, you can't be like, oh, I decided to stay with him.
Yeah,
that's who he is.
I think he did. I think he forced her.
Oh, yeah, of course. I would have played, if I were her, I would have made that part of my narrative.
But then when she was asked about like how she was playing the grieving widow, she said, quote, I honestly felt like a grieving widow. I'd lost my husband, not in the sense he was lost, but he'd left me. I felt desperate. I felt ashamed about what was happening. The emotions I showed were genuine emotions.
I feel for her.
She said that the strain of keeping up that deception was so hard that one time she ran out of the house and went to the beach. And she said that, quote, I sat on the beach looking at the sea. I wished that John had drowned at sea. I considered walking into the sea. I got so desperate, but I couldn't do it because of the effect it would have had on the rest of the family, particularly Mark and Anthony.
Yeah, I think this is
why. So now you're thinking about the boys.
Totally. I think this is why Gary Betzner hypnotized his wife before he went off and faked his death, was to somewhat alleviate her. This concerns this psychic damage.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. Maybe just want her to pull it
maybe
off.
Maybe it was just fun. I don't know.
He just liked it.
So Anne said she had no idea how bad the debt was before he, you know, staged his death, that he had always kind of dealt with all the finances. Yeah. Her court case was followed doggedly by the press. Every detail examined.
Not the British tabloids. Right?
So she gets found guilty. She gets sentenced to 6 years, 3 months. John had gotten the same thing.
Okay, if she gets more time than him, I'm going to lose it.
They got exactly the same. And then they later appealed those decisions, both of them.
Yes, good. For her.
Yeah. Now, it's not a good crime, and it's not a good ridiculous criminal if there's no book involved.
Of course. Oh, yes, please. The book club needs its new books.
While in jail, John wrote a memoir detailing his scam.
Okay.
And, like, in graphic detail, his affairs.
He's like, memoirs, those can be partly fictional?
Yeah. And he tries to smuggle it out of his jail cell.
I like that he's like, a lot of sex. He's like, look,
oh, yeah.
I'm a sexy guy, and you need to hear my story. This is central to understanding the Darwin.
You got to know if you want to know me. Extracts from the book were published in the tabloid The Sun.
Okay, yeah. I knew they'd get in on this.
Because, like, John, he teamed up with this dude, this, like, fraudster that he met in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy posed as his lawyer after he got out. So his other scam artist friend gets out of jail and then says, oh, yeah, I'm his lawyer. And that's how they could exchange uncensored material under Rule 39, which allows for correspondence between prisoners and their legal advisors to be treated as confidential.
So in the U.S., they don't have, like, show me your legal card, like your, like, no, he's your lawyer just like, card or anything? No,
he just, like, walks out of the prison.
Nice suit, you must be a lawyer.
Puts a blazer on exactly. And walks back in. Yeah. So the prison
service. Stains himself a little coffee.
Well, I mean, the prison service, obviously, they don't carry out any checks that
Apparently
they should
not.
Have.
Yeah.
And the reason for the upset about this is that the Ministry of Justice said that it's wrong for convicted criminals to profit from their crimes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the memoir, he called it The Canoe Man, Panama and Back. Yeah. It's a terrible title.
Terrible title.
Terrible. He talks about how he contemplated suicide in the face of his mounting debts, but then he realized it wouldn't solve his financial woes because, you know, you can't collect life insurance. Mm-hmm. And he worried what effect it would have on his wife, which, like,
I don't believe him.
I don't believe him on that. He said, quote, not only would I think I was a failure in the eyes of Anne, but also in the eyes of my two sons, as I would have lost the family home, lost absolutely everything that Anne and I had worked for.
So instead, he fakes his death, makes his wife lie to the kids and pretend he's dead. He's like, that's the answer. That's the good one.
He calls the moment that he came up with the idea to fake his own death a eureka moment.
All right, Archimedes.
He didn't want to take the Oprah's aha.
Yeah.
He said, quote, if we couldn't die, then my crazed brain reasoned I could pretend to die. Not a job for Anne. She may fluff it completely and end up really dead. For my part, I no longer had a choice. I'd made up my mind to do it for real. After all, I wouldn't be the first man to kill himself because of financial pressures. The only difference in this case was that it would look like an accident. A suicide would be useless. The insurance company wouldn't pay it out.
Yeah, yeah.
So he serves half his sentence. He gets out in January 2011 and is released a couple of months later. The Crown Prosecution Service, they recovered assets, including their apartment in Panama City and then the piece of jungle that they bought.
They bought a piece of jungle?
Oh, yeah. They were going to open a bed and breakfast.
Oh, right. The Echo Resort.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And so they combined that with the cash that was left over and the other assets. And prosecutors are about to get back almost £500,000.
Huh.
The news reports, some said that they made off with £250,000 and others said £600,000.
Uh-huh.
It was just a lot, whatever it was.
They're somewhere in the hundreds
somewhere,
of thousands of pounds.
Yeah, it just gets loose. The crime spurred another crime.
Ooh.
Sky News admitted that one of its senior executives authorized a journalist to conduct email hacking on two separate occasions that were in the, quote, public interest, even though, you know, it's violating the Computer Misuse Act.
The public, we really need to know the answer this Darwin
Gerard
guy.
Gerard Tubb, the Sky News Northern England correspondent, he hacked emails belonging to John Darwin while Anne was on trial. So he hacks Joan's emails. He built up a database of emails that he thought would defeat her defense.
Yeah.
And so the charges against him get dropped.
Right.
Because prosecutors said it would not be in the public interest to prosecute him because the emails were accessed with a view to providing that a criminal offense had been committed. So it's like basically like you're kind of helping the prosecution.
I don't get this.
They said a number of the same emails they later got, the police later got them lawfully and were used in trial.
And they were actually from Meghan Markle.
So they, right. So they're like, they were going to come out anyway. Yeah, so whatever, it's cool. It doesn't seem right, but who am I to say? But this wasn't the end of Canoe Man John Darwin.
What happened to Canoe Man John Darwin, Elizabeth?
2013.
Yes.
He gets arrested for violating his parole after he traveled to Ukraine.
Why? Okay.
2013.
Was he washing money?
Now, under the terms of his release, you'll find out what he was washing over there. Under the terms of his release, he wasn't allowed to leave Britain without notifying authorities.
I'm betting on that.
He didn't care. He went to the town of Sumy in Ukraine to meet a woman.
Isn't that like a resort town, Sumy?
Yeah, he was buying himself a bride.
Buying a bride.
Yeah, because he and Anne, they were divorced at this point.
I was hoping that she had left him finally.
Yeah, well, it falls through with the Ukrainian.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Anne's retired. Yeah. She lives alone in the north of England. She reconciled with her two boys.
Every time he goes to a new woman, when they meet him, they're like, oh, no.
They're like, no. They're like, Anne, he's your problem again.
X out.
So she makes up with her kids, Mark and Anthony.
Good. I like that.
They had disowned her, like, completely. And she's able to be a part of her grandchildren's lives.
Nice. Oh, they became parents and that kind of softened their stance?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, mistakes are made sometimes as a parent.
Yeah, and their wives are like, she had
it's funny how that helps, becoming a parent. You suddenly judge your own parents differently.
Yeah.
I say that as a non-parent.
I know, right?
I still get to judge mine.
Totally. Yeah. While she was in prison, Anne wrote a book.
Oh, wow. Anne.
She worked with journalist David Lee on a book called Out of My Depth.
You can't finish your book? Go to prison.
Yeah.
A journalist will come and help you.
We got us another book. She talks publicly a lot about her involvement in the scam, and she still says that she was controlled by John through the whole thing.
I do believe that.
Yeah. John, when he got out, he returned to his hometown. The Staincliff Hotel there has a canoe bar and Darwin restaurant.
Oh, so he's just banking on the you knew me when?
Well, no, he didn't do it. They just...
Oh, they did
the
that
hotel
on...
already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's like, you know, talk of the town. He tried to sell that memoir and was not successful. Uh-huh. No publishers bought it. So then he moved to the Philippines.
Women and publishers agree about him.
Yeah, right? He moved to the Philippines.
Oh, God.
And he married a woman named Mercy May, who was 23 years his junior.
Mercy May.
He lives there now. Mm. They run a market stall together.
Really?
Yeah, outside
of Manila.
So she
does all the work. I'm just guessing. I'm guessing he's not out front.
Of course. This is what Mercy May said, quote, I know what he did. He knows, and he paid penalty. He doesn't need to be reminded.
Well, I'm glad he's got a very supportive and loyal wife.
So he made the news in 2022.
What for?
When Mercy told the tabloids that he was willing to travel to Ukraine to fight.
What?
He was 71 at this point.
In the war?
Yeah, in the war.
I was like really hoping it would be like an exhibition boxing match and not in the war.
The
but
war.
Either one would be a bad idea.
The war. Mercy told the Mirror, quote, yes, dangerous for the Russian when he shoot them.
Oh, no.
Yeah. She said that he had good life insurance, quote, he will have a bulletproof vest and good life insurance. Good for me.
I made the bulletproof vest myself.
Right?
It's great.
Out of the market stall stuff.
No, it's like, it may work.
But
it
like,
should work.
Why was she talking to the tabloids in 2022?
And why was she trying to send her husband off to war and talking about the insurance
payoff?
Well,
that I understand.
I mean, I get it, but why
talk
about that?
She's talking to the tabs because ITV released a 4-part drama series called The Thief, His Wife, and the Canoe.
Oh, like The Thief, A Wife, His Lover. I got it.
Here's the cast. Eddie Marson is John Darwin. You know that actor? He was like in... He played the boxing brother in Ray Donovan. And I know you'll recognize him. If you see him, you recognize him.
The name sounds familiar.
Monica Dolan is Anne Darwin. Mark Stanley is Mark Darwin.
Not Mark Stanley.
Dominic Applewhite is Anthony Darwin. And Carl Pilkington as DC Phil Bailey.
Yes.
You know Carl Pilkington.
No, who's Carl Pilkington?
He's the like dimwit buddy of, what's his name that I can't stand? The original Office guy.
The original Office guy. Gervais, Ricky Gervais.
Ricky Gervais, right? Okay, Ricky Gervais. He has a show with his pal, Carl Pilkington.
Oh, when they go and
travel. Yes. And Carl is such a dimwit, but I love him so much.
I have seen
this. He's hilarious.
I'm familiar.
And Stephen Merchant.
Yeah.
He's funny. He's involved. Anyway, Carl Pilkington, mm-hmm. of all people, is DC Phil Bailey.
That's a big mood in the UK, I've noticed, is we take one guy, most likely funny, and then we have him travel places. There's a lot of shows.
Oh, yeah. There are a bunch of shows like that.
Yeah.
So you can watch this on BritBox. Uh-huh. Which, hypothetically, if I were someone
who... Are you sponsored by them yet?
If I were someone who watched TV, I would 100% have a BritBox subscription.
If you did.
And if I were the type to watch TV, which I don't because it's totally beneath me, mm-hmm. I would wait until I finished recording this episode to watch the series because I wouldn't want the fictionalized version to taint my research version. Uh-huh. If I were to watch
if
TV.
If you were, yes.
Yeah. So, Zarin.
When is Call of the Midwife on BritBox?
It's not. Well, I watch it through PBS Passport. I mean, I would would hypothetically watch it through PBS Passport, and I would hypothetically watch things like Father Brown through
BritBox. Hypothetically speaking.
Hypothetically, or, you know,
just
Silent
for...
Witness. I hear that's, I don't know. I don't know if that's a show or not, or if it's on,
it
I don't know.
It sounds like it would be good if it were
maybe,
a show.
Maybe, or like Poirot's. I don't know. I don't watch TV.
I appreciate this. Come this theoretical now. Walk.
What's your ridiculous takeaway?
He didn't deserve her, so it shouldn't have worked out, but you get away, your wife helps you fake your death. She pulls off the hard work of the month of convincing everyone you're dead. You're supposed to then take her on a vacation or move somewhere nice. And he doesn't do any of that. He's like, instead, I'm going to the Midwest. I got myself a gamer wife. I mean, bro, what the hell?
I'm going to sit in this room and play video games and hobble around town.
Early in, his first idea is I've been online a while.
Yeah. Anne's the worst.
What's yours, Elizabeth?
He's a horse's ass.
Yeah.
I can't stand him.
Totally.
And Anne is a doormat, and I feel for her.
Uh-huh, same.
And I'm glad that things have resolved themselves for Anne. And I feel bad for Mercy May, but I kind of don't because I feel like she maybe...
She seems a little opportunistic.
She might smother him into sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won't say that.
Who knows? Hypothetically.
Hypothetically.
Allegedly. Let's see. Oh, Dave. Do we have any talkbacks?
I think I can rustle one up.
Oh, yeah. Freshie.
Talkbacks. Oh my god, did he just say that?
OMG.
Hi, Elizabeth and Zarin. I just listened to your episode about all the fake universities, and my favorite part was all the dogs and cats getting their degrees. I think that's awesome. And I think that y'all should make a t-shirt that says Rude Dude University, because I would totally love a bogus degree from Rude Dude University. I would buy that. All right, bye.
Yes,
like
Rude
that.
Dude University.
We got two ideas. Start a fake university and sell merch.
We should sell diplomas from Rude Dude University.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. We of course get in on the diploma mill, and then we also sell merch.
Do you want a doctorate in criming?
I told you I'm working on that. I'm going to get the legitimate one, and then I'm going to get a fake one just in case the legitimate one doesn't
fit. We could just put them up on the website and people could print them off. They don't have to buy them.
I like that, yeah.
I'm charitable.
Yes. All right, donate to a local charity and you get one of these.
Mm-hmm. Let's
you don't even have to give us proof.
You just hack the mainframe and get in there. Hackers. That's it. That's all I have for today. You can find us online at RidiculousCrime.com. We're also at Ridiculous Crime on both Twitter and Instagram. Email ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. Download the iHeart app and please leave us a talk back. Reach out and keep us sleazy. Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by Houseboat Guy, Dave Kustin. Research is by Pontoon Boat Human, Marissa Brown, and Jet Ski Individual, Andrea Song Charpentier. The theme song is by Trawler Person, Thomas Lee, and Wakeboard Dude, Travis Dutton. Host wardrobe is provided by Botany 500. Executive producers are Ben Sloop, John Bolin, and Barge Buddy, Noel Brown.
Ridiculous Crime.
Say it one more time.
Ridiculous Crime.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.